accession number 21735, Reel 5.
Bob Shrimpton, Reel 5. So, you've just been recruited to the Navy. What happened next?
Well, it was very fast. They had the medical, and they said, OK, we'll notify you in 2 or 3 days. And that was correct. In 2 or 3 days, I had to report to Reading. There I was issued, along with about 8 or 9 others, if I remember, from the Reading area, with warrants, train, HMS Collingwood, near Gosport. That was a land-based barracks for training of seamen. We arrived there, young, probably full of excitement in some ways, and first day was kitting out, drawing your uniform and your stamp to stamp all your kit and all this sort of thing.
What was it stamped with?
It was stamped with your number. Because we were Portsmouth Division, was PJX 56333333. Sticks in your memory. Everything had to be stamped with your number. Then allocated a hut. They then put in a CW candidate. A CW candidate was somebody who they thought was officer material, usually from university or college, what we used to call the upper crust. He was a nice lad. We helped him out quite a lot. But there you did your basic training, 8 weeks solid of basic training.
Can I just ask you what kit you've been issued with?
Well, seaman uniform. You had your bell bottoms, your tops, your shirts, cap, neck collars, money belt, I always remember that, boots and socks and that sort of thing. All your kit was issued to you then. If it didn't fit, you swapped it with somebody else that made it did fit. Being fairly slim, reasonably mid-height, I had no problems with that. Now, I found those 8 weeks most entertaining. A lot of them were in some trepidation. But because I'd done so many years in scouting and I'd been through Home Guard training, I found it a bit of a doddle because it was all basic military training and discipline. I think what used to strike me in my mind was the number of youngsters that couldn't even clean their boots, do their washing or make a bed because mother had always done it for them. Some of the boys are better off people. They'd had maids to do all these sort of jobs. So I used to find myself as acting as a bit of a nursemaid to some of them. But I found it good fun. I found it most enlightening, especially in knotting classes and that sort of thing, where I could do all the rope work and not to think about it, and spending probably some of the evenings helping some of the other lads out that were struggling a bit. But I found it, that period of 8 weeks, and it was intensive, especially when you had to run across the parade ground with full kit and your gas mask on and climb up scrambling nets on the other side. That was agony.
So how was your day kind of structured when, you know, as you just arrived at the start of the 8 weeks, how did they get you into the training? What would the first days be?
Well, the first days were virtually, from the start, up at 6, wash, breakfast, and then straight out onto the training grounds. And you didn't miss half an hour. There was no idle time. We had a break, I think, sometime between 2 and half past, which was called make and mend. In other words, they still do that today, make and mend break, in which you do any repairs to your kit, clean your shoes, and all this sort of thing. But we used to spend our make and mend trying to get some sleep because it was really exhausting. There's no doubt about it. I mean, those chief petty officers, they'd been called back into the Navy from reserve, They'd been all through this. They were in their late 50s, gnarled old gentlemen, but they were absolutely brilliant, absolutely brilliant. They pushed us, but, you know, they understood what we had to do, and I think that was really brilliant. There's no doubt about it.
What type of things would you be doing on the training grounds then?
All sorts of things. I mean, you see, in that 8 weeks, they had to assess which branch of the Navy you would go into, whether it be into gunnery, engineering, into radio, any form of thing, and submarine detection, ASDIC. So they had to assess your mental abilities as well as your physical. If you had a big brawny lad, they'd say, right, he'd make a good gun buyer, or, you know, in a gun turret. Then they test you mentally as to your reactions mentally as to whether you were adept at radio or in my case, submarine detection. So it was an assessment time, that 8 weeks, although you did your normal drill as regards seamen, you still had to do square bashing and that sort of thing, but and you had to learn how to maintain a seaboat or a whaler. But it was an assessment time, and in that 8 weeks, when you come to think of it, they had to fit the round pegs into round holes, and it's not easy to do in 8 weeks.
Who would be doing the assessing?
Usually the training petty officers and your watch officer in charge of that particular section. Every day, I dare say, they got down into a huddle, and they would bracket people into certain... Because, I mean, you imagine these training petty officers, they were trained men. They were experienced men with probably 20, 30 years' service in the Navy. And they could spot the type of chap that would be a good gunner. He would be a good seaman. He would make a good signaller, and this sort of thing. So the assessment was on them. And it wasn't very often you had a square peg in a round hole. It was pretty well done. It was pretty well done.
So you're involved in drill, and what about physical training?
Physical training, oh, tell me. Yeah, I mean, when you come to think of it, the type of drill we did, that was physical training. I mean, you had to learn how to... we weren't gunners or anything like that in the end, but we still had to do a gun training team, taking a field gun apart and carrying ammunition. And believe me, that is not easy. And, of course, a lot of lads used to suffer quite a bit if they hadn't done... And some of the town lads had never had a countryside like we had, where I came from, for charging about across the common. That was the physical exercise. And swimming in the canal every evening. They never had those... That opportunity for physical training, so they found it difficult to start with. But we still did the physical training with the PTIs, the physical training instructors.
What would that consist of?
All the usual press ups and running and jumping and all the physical exercises, which probably would not suit the modern day athlete. But structurally, it was very, very good. It was very, very good.
How did you take to it?
I loved it. I loved it. I didn't find it strange because I'd been in that environment probably all my life. My father taught me boxing, and many a time I got knocked out by him. But so physically, although I was a slight lad, I found physical training very, very enjoyable. Very enjoyable indeed.
Did anybody not take to the physical training at all?
I don't think so, because a lot of lads, if you can remember, we came from the Reading area, and a lot of the lads were rural lads. Some had been on farms, and they were pretty brawny. So it didn't worry them. I think one or two... And some of the other boys had probably been to public schools, and there, of course, they've got a strict regime as regards physical training. And I don't think we had many dropouts as regards physical training in those days. I think everybody enjoyed it, quite honestly.
Now, you mentioned certain aspects of the training there, the gunnery side of things. a knot. Can you tell me about the knots, what you were doing in the knots?
Well, the thing is, you see, when you have to do a seaman course, I mean, a lot of the chaps didn't specialise in any other thing in the Navy, except they were forecastle division or seaman branch. In other words, they were responsible for all the maintenance of hawsers, cables, ropes and all this sort of thing on the ship. And so we all had to go through that. And the idea was you had a long Nissen hut, and through this Nissen hut was a long hawser stretched from one end of the rope, or the end of the hut, to the other. Hanging off this were lines and lines of lashings hanging down. On the opposite wall, there were all these diagrams of all the knots you had to learn to tie. Now, I was lucky because I'd tied all these before every day of my life as in scouting, and it didn't worry me. And these lads used to peer up at it, and they'd fiddle about with it. And I tied all these knots, and I was looking out through the window, watching a gun team charging up in the playground. And I remember this chief petty officer coming up to me, and he really told, what the so-and-so you think you're doing? Get and tie your knots. I said, well, sorry, chief, I've already done them. They're there. And he looked for a few minutes at this lashing, and I'd tied all the knots in one lashing, and it was hanging down, and he went slowly down them, checking them. Where'd you learn to do that, lad? I said, well, I was in the skating movement before I came into the Navy. Ah. Hmm. Right, lad, you can stand out here in front of this lot, he said, and you can teach him how to tie knots. I'm off for a cup of tea. Oh, it was great fun. But it was amazing, you know, because even later on, when I was aboard ship, I often have somebody come up and say, look, I'm taking my leading seaman's course next week. I'm a bit dodgy on knots. I hear you're pretty good. Could you give me a hand? And they come round in the mess deck, and we'd sit there of an evening tying knots. Actually, that's great. I said, right, it's going to cost you a bit of your tot of rum tomorrow if you pass. And so, you see, it carried on from there. But as I said, I was taught by a man who'd been in the Navy all his life. He was a rear admiral, and he taught me seamanship and not. So it came very easy to me, very easy indeed.
You also mentioned that you trained on boats.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, with boating, again, we had the Fleet Pond, we had the canal, and there were boats everywhere. In those early days, I can remember going right the full length of the Basingstoke Canal, up right the way through to Maple Durwell, where it started, through the tunnels, which are now closed because they're bat colonies. So I spent quite a considerable amount of time on boats, and they were clinker built. They were built of wood. They weren't fiberglass in those days.
So, what was the Navy training intended for? What were the classes about when you were dealing with boats?
Oh yeah, well that you'd have to learn how to rig a dinghy, the sail, and you'd have to know how to maintain a whaler, the rowlocks and the caulking and that sort of. Everything was basic to maintain that particular boat. So, I mean, it went on. But they didn't spend too much time on that. I think they were more inclined to the discipline side of the naval training, so that if you were shifted into or drafted to a boat, you had to understand the runnings of that boat and the discipline that was necessary. So they didn't waste too much time on any one particular subject, because what they were trying to do was assess you as to what you could do.
Did they? You mentioned ASDIC training. Did you do that in that first 8 weeks? Oh,
no. What they do what they call reaction tests. And I remember standing in a darkened corridor, and you had to quickly spot lights that kept flashing on, which colours they were and that sort of thing. And then they give you different sounds through earphones, and you had to assess, oh, that's a motor car. That's farmland. And you had to quickly answer these questions. It was an assessment period. And so after about 7 weeks, I was told to report to this officer, and he said, your reactions are quick as regards sight and sound. And so he said, ASDIC training for you. ASDIC training? I'd never even heard of the word. I said, excuse me, what does that mean? ASDIC, he says, is the submarine detection. Anti-Submarine Detection and Investigation Committee. I thought that was a rather ancient way of putting it. How can you have an investigation committee aboard a boat? But anyway, that was how it was formed.
So that had been assessed during that?
That was assessed in about the last week. Well, I suppose it was assessed over the period of time, your quick reactions, and that was it.
You also mentioned, did you do any weapons training at all?
Well, yes. I mean, the thing is, all we did really was the basic weapons training, as we did with the Home Guard. Rifle drill, how to strip and clean a rifle. Well, that didn't worry me because I'd done it all before. It was a bit difficult for some of them. But anyway, that was the weapons training. And, of course, you had the bayonet practice, and they also started to teach you unarmed combat. Now, we'd done some of this before in the Home Guard when we had PTI instructors from Aldershot came over evenings to teach us unarmed combat, how to disarm a sentry or how to disarm a person that was coming at you with a bayonet or a knife. So all these things, we carried on from there.
Can you describe to me how you would do both of those things? How would you disarm a sentry?
Oh, well, that was usually done by creeping up behind, and you must attack from behind, not in front, and strangulation. I mean, all these things were taught. Luckily, I never had to do that. I was never involved in close combat, not like some of the troops were, but I never had to do that, and I never had to use a bayonet against a human being. Although we were very intense in our training and our application to it, I think it would be difficult to do this in real life unless, of course, you suddenly remembered that it was your life that was being threatened or your friends. I think it's very, very difficult. I know the troops had to do it, and good luck to them, but I think it'd been very, very difficult being a human being myself and one that I love other people and like to make friends with other people. It doesn't matter what their nationality is or the colour of their skin. I wondered if I could have done it. I probably could.
Who were your instructors while you were doing your basic training?
Who were the instructors?
For that?
Well, they were. A lot of the unarmed combat and the training instructors for the rifle drill and that sort of thing. They were young petty officers from Royal Naval Barracks Portsmouth, or PTIs. But all the other basic training was done by senior semi-retired men that had come out of reserve to carry on their expertise. But the modern type of training was done by the PTI and the training instructors from RMB Portsmouth.
How were the recruits treated by the
Portsmouth? Well, I think they were treated really humanely. I mean, the thing is, they had to drive us, because you remember, we only had 8 weeks, and the Navy were very, very short of men, with the amount of losses we'd had and that sort of thing, and they had to get these men through as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So they drove them from early morning to late at night, and you didn't have much time. I think I only had about 3 or 4 days off, or 3 or 4 evenings off, rather, to walk down into Fareham or somewhere like that. Every other time, you were spent on the training ground or in the training huts.
What was the character of the base? What was your accommodation like?
Oh, they were all knitting huts. I remember it was a very, very vast square where the whole division could march and get lost on it. At the end of there, you had these great scrambling nets come up. You had mock gun pits for people that were doing gunnery training. They had scaffolding up where you climbed up onto a ramp, and there you learnt how to heave the line, or swing the lead, as they call it, to take soundings. and you had to learn how to get the boat moving and pass it along. Then you had a medical centre, but basically all round the camp were long listen huts, which were your quarters, and of course you had the large cookhouse and dining hall.
How many people would be in a Nissen hut?
About 20. About 20 in one hut. And that was your section. Then you had three or four sections would become one unit for training purposes. But there's about 20 lads in each hut. And they had to be religiously cleaned every day. I mean, they had to be spotless. Because, you see, I think the reason behind that was the fact that when you're on board a ship, it had to be kept absolutely spotless and clean in the mess deck for your health reasons. So, although you cleaned that hut out religiously every morning, you washed it through, you cleaned everything, they'd come in and they'd say, "This place is filthy, clean it." And so you have to go all through it again. And you can understand now, in retrospect, the logic behind that. I mean, cleanliness was the most important thing, because I remember later on, I went on to serve on a French destroyer, and the state of that ship was absolutely disgusting. And so we had to set to and clean the thing before we would, you know, even work on it. Because we've been trained that cleanliness is the most important thing for a ship to maintain your health.
So you were having all this sort of stuff instilled into you.
Mm.
Are you at this time learning about the structure of the Navy, how it all fits together?
Well, I think so. I mean, you'd get an officer would come in and they would more or less explain the structure of the Navy. I mean, they'd have the charts up on the wall, you know, Admiral of the Fleet, then you'd have Admiral Cruiser Squadron, Admiral responded Destroyer Squadron, and all these sort of things. So you understood how the ladder went as regards right the way down to where you are, you know, the rating on board a ship. So you roughly knew. I mean, all the services were the same, RAF, Army. And so it clicked in mind, because coming from a military family, I understood the structures of command. So it's quite easy to think about that.
Did you have instruction on naval insignia, so you could recognise them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, all those charts were on the wall. I mean, you know, the three buttons was the masthead arms or the midshipman, the single ringer, two and a half ringer, and all this sort of thing. Oh, yes, you had to learn the insignia. And it was always a laugh of the chief petty officer. We'd say, "No, listen, lads, if it doesn't move, paint it. If it moves, salute it." I mean, this has gone on through generations, this has.
You mentioned at one stage that you'd done some physical education wearing gas masks. Had you done any gas training at this period?
No. They didn't do gas training as such. I mean, they do modernise now, where they go into gas-filled rooms and that sort of thing. But we were only just taught to wear the gas mask at the signal, how to put it on, and that sort of thing. But they didn't actually... we went into some smoke-filled rooms. It was a sealed, big sealed box, and they'd fill it with smoke, and you had to go through one end and up a passage and come out through the other end. But they didn't actually put any toxic stuff in there, so we never went through that. I suppose in many ways you'd hardly expect a gas attack at sea. So they didn't put too much emphasis on that.
Within this, how did you get along with your other recruits during the 8 weeks?
Well, I got along fine with them because, as I say, having been in the skating movement in Home Guard, we learned to mix with people. My mother was a very sociable person. She talked to anybody. And so I took that on from there. There were one or two reticent people, and I think they were reticent because they were nervous. They probably never had to mix commonly, virtually, as a family. They probably you know, only child, and they had no contact with other people. And I think some of those find it difficult. But eventually it all broke down. I think it broke down because you were all in the same boat together and you helped each other. I mean, if a chap had difficulty in his equipment, you'd go across and give him a hand. So I think basically we all got on very, very well indeed. And the other thing was, of course, the fact that the training was so intense, you didn't have time for petty squabbles. And I think this was the thing, we wanted to get out of that training camp and to a ship as quick as possible.
Would you think that's part of training policy?
It quite possibly is. The intensity of the training was the fact that they kept you going. There was no time to harbour, to have an unrest. If there was unrest in any particular hut or any particular person, I think the chief petty officers used to sort that out pretty well, and that person that was causing unrest was moved. So I think that was part of the training, to get on with your shipmates. Because I think they realised that once you're on a ship, there's nowhere for you to go. And if there's going to be arguments in the mess deck, it disrupts the discipline of that ship. So they had to assess people. If there was a troublemaker anywhere, he had to be moved. And so they knitted together. And if your hut knitted together as a unit, then they realised that wherever they sent those people, they would fit in with the ship's company. And that it was very, very clever assessment, psychologically.
What about rations? What were you eating?
Well, we were fed far better than we were at home. I mean, the rations were basic, but we had, I think, better food. It was well cooked too. I mean, the naval cooks are renowned for turning out a meal. But we had good, solid, plain food, supplemented by the occasional cake that Mother had managed to find bits and pieces for and be sent through the parcel post to us. But basically the rations were adequate and they were very sustaining too.